Welcome to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's podcast for innovative entrepreneurs and executives. And brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP Chartered Accountants. Here is your host, Robert Gold.
Once again, from high atop the Business Cast Podcast Center in Toronto, live and in the morning. We're way off to the east. I can see Barry's Head, Newfoundland. I'm Robert Gold, Managing Partner of Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants in Toronto, and this podcast is produced in partnership with Profit Magazine and ProfitGuide.com. Today, we're going to have some fun. Jordan Dolgan is with us. Jordan is the principal at Dolgan Professional Corporation, a business law firm, dpclaw.ca. Jordan, welcome to the Profit Business Cast.
Pleasure to be here, Robert. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm looking forward to this because you are known to have opinions about a number of things. You and I have chatted offline about some of those things that get us both excited. We decide today, Jordan, you and I would focus in on why most transactions fail. Business transactions, left, right, and center, we both see them every day of the week. They don't all work out, do they, Jordan?
No, unfortunately, they don't. And in some cases, it's a failure to close the deal. In other cases, the deal closes, but it's a failure to get the benefits that the parties want after the deal closes. So failure can be in different ways.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I've made a few bullet points. I think you probably have too. So my first bullet point as to why most transactions fail is because the participants are unprepared. Neither the buyer or the seller knows exactly where they want to go in this transaction or how they're going to get there. They just decided we're going to do a deal. Somehow they paper it, they shake hands, and then the proverbial crap hits the fan.
There's a couple interesting aspects of that. You know, some are hard numbers and some are sort of soft people stuff. On the hard numbers, lots of deals will have working capital adjustments. Buyers pay full value and want sellers to leave behind enough working capital to finance the business, and there's adjustments. And a lot of smaller clients, they have notice to reader financials, and they have no idea what GAAP would do to those financials. And by not running through some scenarios before closing, they kind of close blindly. And after closing, when you've got an audit of those closing numbers and it gets put through a working capital reconciliation, often sellers can lose a big chunk of the purchase price, and then you get into major dispute. Failing to prepare by not really understanding what the deal will do to your numbers and your price is huge. And on the people side, sometimes it's really just a function of a lot of entrepreneurs make horrible employees, which is why they're entrepreneurs. And they just are totally ill-prepared for life as an employee. And what happens often, it's almost the first thing I do on a deal with a client who's going to continue after closing, I'll recommend that my communications with them are not on the corporate server, but in a Yahoo or Gmail account, because in the heat of the negotiation, sellers sometimes don't say very nice things about buyers, forgetting that buyers become their employers, have full access to the corporate email, and then post-closing stuff is disclosed and shared that shouldn't have been, and that gets nasty.
Well, in fact, you're making reference to a transaction where the vendor of the business actually stays behind and becomes an employee. Now, I know that happens, but these days everything is succession this and transition that. And my thought is that often the vendor leaves the employee. He just moves on for better or worse. No matter who he's selling to, generally speaking, right, he does not stick around except for maybe some goodwill and some glad handing. What do you think?
It depends on the deal. It really depends. I mean, often if the buyer is a competitor, and particularly where the seller is a little older in years and not really close to the business and the people and the customers, you know, other than maybe for some minimal transition stuff, most buyers are happy for the sellers to get out of the way. The buyer is not a competitor with their own infrastructure. The financial purchaser or strategic buyer, you know, very often sellers will be expected to stay on for 2, 3, 4 years. So it really depends on the nature of the buyer.
So let's talk about something that's still under the broad topic of participants unprepared, and that's where we have an intergenerational transfer of ownership from family to family, parents to children. This can go either way, and you and I can probably both argue that most intergenerational transfers don't work, but I can point to some that are very successful that have worked for multi-generations. So what are your thoughts on intergenerational sales and selling to the kids?
Number one, it's the personality and the competence of the kids. And especially when the kids have been involved in the business for a number of years, and they're not sort of right out of school, you know, those can work really, really well. It requires planning and thinking and integration into the business and where the kids are engaged. In some families, the kids wind up in the business, but they're really not contributing and they're really not qualified to run the business, and those fail more often than not. So, you know, it's a function of, are the kids competent and motivated and engaged? And have you spent enough time planning it? And then it can work really well.
And of course, you also run into the issue of sibling rivalry. And I've often seen this where the parents are vending, you know, proper transaction, tax planning, valuations, all the stuff you need to do, but they're giving consideration to family members and siblings who are not, in fact, active in the business because they feel that brother or sister who's uninvolved should also gain in the sale of this. And that causes some rankles between the siblings as well, because it's child A whose money's going to the parents. All of a sudden, there's some piecing off of that child B, and I've seen that cause a great deal of difficulty as well.
No, you're totally right. In a perfect world, one kid would get the business and the other kid or the other children who really shouldn't be in the business because they've got nothing to contribute should receive their inheritance or their value in the form of non-business assets, real estate or inheritance or life insurance proceeds or something else. But a lot of parents want to be fair to everyone, and it's almost like their gift to their kids after they're gone, you guys figure it out. And they put all their kids in the middle of this business and are just happy for them to sort it out somehow, and it can work, but usually it doesn't.
And I've often seen as well that parents leave enough in the bank, whether it's $100,000, a quarter mil or whatever, and with their attitude, well, the estate will have enough money to take care of all of this. Of course, that puts the worst of all worlds on the children and on the family, because the money might be there, but there's no direction, there's nobody in charge, there's nobody that says, here's the steps to take, only that, whoa, there's money in the bank, we better clean something up.
It gets complicated, and I've seen family businesses where you had a number of kids, and they all had equity, but they weren't all employees, and some had votes and some didn't, and the structure was complicated, and the shareholders agreement was 70 pages long, and it's challenging to do it that way, because the passive siblings have expectations that are different from the active siblings, and that passive-active interplay creates resentment, particularly when the business grows, and the active owners are resentful in sharing with the passive owners. And then you get all sorts of problems from that. But the dynamic of those family transfers.
So let's go to your point form list. What are the one or two top things on that list?
I think one of the reasons that transactions fail after they're completed is, and this happens more with buyers that are competitors, is there's a bit of buyer arrogance, I would suggest, where rather than buyers are acquiring businesses because they really believe that they can fix the problems and make more money, and they forget that some things are working well. And the best thing to do, which doesn't happen, is let's take 3, 4, 5 months, sit back, see what best practices exist and what works, and then we'll start to integrate and change thereafter. A lot of buyers don't do that. There's this arrogance of, this is the way we do it, and from day one, everything gets changed, and including all the good stuff that was working. And that leads to all kinds of changes in culture, changes of staff, changes with customers, and often it leads to poor integration and poor realization of the deal benefits. And that's a big one.
So another thing that concerns me is the lack of management capabilities. And we may have an individual who inherited some money or sold a business, but now he wants to buy another business. And in doing so, buys into a business, does a successful transaction financially, but now he's at the helm of a business he really doesn't understand. And although he might have been a tech entrepreneur before, all of a sudden he's running a warehouse manufacturing. It's a completely different world. And very quickly, his lack of management capabilities in that venue are going to bring the things right to its knees.
Some buyers do not appreciate. They bring a level of financial acumen to the deal. They'll look at the financials and they'll see all kinds of opportunities to clean up the financials and really add net income, cut costs and all the rest. And they're really not paying attention to the cultural issues and the staff and just the industry. I had one buyer, and as he did his due diligence, he walked away from the deal because it was in a particular industry that was construction related. And he realized that the survival skills in that industry, how's that for discrete language? The survival skills in that industry were skills that he didn't have. have. He didn't know the players, and he didn't understand how business was done to survive in that industry. And he just shook his head and realized, you know what, it doesn't matter how good I am at sharpening my pencil. I don't know how to play this game in this industry. And he just walked away. And had he closed the deal, I don't think he would have been in business for more than 6 months to a year and would have lost all the sales because he just didn't understand how we do business in that field.
So at dpclaw.ca, Dolgan Professional Corporation, dpclaw.ca, there's a terrific business law resource library. I would suggest our listeners that are interested in finding out a little bit more about what you do and things you have to say, check that out. So at dpclaw.ca, Dolgan Professional Corporation, dpclaw.ca, there's a terrific business law resource library. I would suggest our listeners that are interested in finding out a little bit more about what you do and things you have to say, check that out. But I want to give you the final comment here. What are the three things that you would recommend to any entrepreneurs across the country looking to do a deal to make it successfully and grow?
Well, doing your due diligence is number one. Really understanding what the skeletons are that are going to come to roost, because every business has got a little hair on it, and understanding what the deal issues are going to be, number one. Number two, buyers just shouldn't pay 100% unless you're buying from a receiver. You don't want to pay all cash, and the reason you don't want to pay all cash is that when those skeletons come to roost, you want to use the seller's unpaid purchase price to finance the skeletons that are realistically going to cause your cash flow issues after closing. The third, I think, from a buyer's point of view, is to really look beyond the numbers and look at the people and realize that, you know, fundamentally the business is about the customers and the staff, and understanding the culture and understanding the connections there and really sitting back and learning how that works and try to preserve that.
Great tips. And I love the one you said earlier, buyer arrogance. Don't be arrogant if you're a buyer, and don't be arrogant if you're a seller. Jordan Dolgan, principal at Dolgan Professional Corporation, a business law firm. I love it. dpclaw.ca. Jordan, thank you for being a guest on the Profit Business Cast.
Robert, it was an absolute pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Until next time, I'm Robert Gold, managing partner of Benegold LLP, chartered accountants in Toronto. Buyer arrogance, due diligence, you name it, give us a shout. Check us out, benegold.ca. See what a great CA firm can do for you. You can find other great episodes of the Profit Business Cast at profitguide.com. Thank you, Jordan. See you all next time in the morning, everyone, and good night, Barry's Head, Newfoundland.
You've been listening to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's business podcast, and brought to you by Benegold LLP Chartered Accountants. From acceleration to succession, strategy to tax planning, there's a lot more through the door at benegold.ca.